coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cole, do you hear that?
I hear something.
Yeah,
it in sounds the distance, like a rumbling of like in the alley or something.
What you hear is a rumbling in the alley. Everyone else hears is wedding bells. What does that say about you?
I'm on the wrong side of town. Damn it! Who knew there were two first
call an Uber
first Gotham churches in Gotham?
Call an Uber.
Yeah.
Get over here.
I do that so often.
Because wedding bells are chiming, love is in the air, and we are here to celebrate.
My thought was I went to Crime Alley.
Oh, well, yeah, you always do. They have the best.
I know. You're telling me.
They have the best Coney dogs on Crime Alley. That's a
Coney while the Uber's on the way. But
yeah, so tonight we celebrate the impending nuptials of Selina Kyle and Bruce Wayne by doing something I don't think we've really done before, and that is really getting into the character of Catwoman. This was Cole's idea. Cole's idea, which, as always with when Cole and I put our heads together, spins out into something more than what we had originally envisioned. So this is going to end up being a...
It's like that Rosie Greer movie, The Thing with Two Heads, you know? Ray Milan and Rosie Greer.
I didn't realize Rosie Greer was in that movie, but...
Yeah, he's the other head. Well, they had to find the two whitest people. So that when one was wearing the other's fake head, they didn't look any less wide.
Also, that wasn't a real head, but we digress.
Cole,
what is the title for this two-parter?
This two-parter is Cat-like.
Cat-like.
Because it is both touching on the feline wiles of one Catwoman, as well as the fact that people kind of like this character because she's been around forever.
Yes. Yes, she has.
And because of The Thing with Two Heads, we wind up taking what started out on the queue as another episode, another issue of the show, and then becomes a two-parter. So this is part one, Smart as a Whip.
And we did come up with a secondary title right before the show started, and that was either I can't remember whether we landed on the long engagement or the longest engagement.
Well, yeah, it started out as a long engagement, and it becomes sort of the longest engagement because the kind of the romance, the Bruce and Selina romance, has been going on longer than I've been alive, and I'm not young.
Well, it started in, and we'll get into this tonight, but it literally started in 1940, and it's run through 2018, so almost 80 years. Basically, this is love by attrition. Just wearing Bruce down to a bat nub, until finally...
He's like, all right, damn it, I'll marry you. He's like, I don't want to. But also, what's the axiom that, you know, your wedding ring should, what, cost like 2 months' salary?
Yeah,
like that? I mean, when you're Bruce Wayne, that's a hell of a chunk of change.
But what's the
wonder he spent the last 60 years saving up.
What's the conversion rate of all the crap or all the shit that Selina Kyle has stolen from Bruce Wayne over the years? Like, doesn't it just, why don't you just hawk some of that and buy your own wedding ring, Selina?
Well, the thing about it was, every time he would buy her the Bat wedding ring.
Yes, of course.
He would steal the Bat wedding ring. And then he would have to use his keen detective skills to figure out where she sold it. Last time was he needed to go to Marrakesh because that's the only place you could sell it.
He had to climb the mountain outside of New Parabat because nobody else would take it anymore.
Right.
Ra's al Ghul was the only one that would take it in Hawk.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was out of spite.
Well, she had to call an Ubu.
An Ubu, Uber, Uber.
Uber, Uber.
Uber. God damn it. I have been, before the show, I said I've been chugging apple cider vinegar all night. I'm ready to mess this up. I'm ready to get into it. So prior to this, we did a series
for those
of,
who like wine bad.
It's, we do. I broke sad tonight. That's what I did.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
We did a series of shows called episodes called Roguish Eyes, which we are going to revisit. But in those shows, we went through kind of meticulously not just the villains in the Bat universe, but really kind of what made them tick and where they came from and their evolution. And that's sort of what we want to do with Catwoman, but there's just so much that we had to break it into two.
Yes, indeed. In fact, this is kind of, I mean, granted, it's a reprise of Roguish Eyes, Cat's Pajamas, in a sense, but this is a character that goes beyond, I think, even more so than the Joker. This is a character with such rich history and so many stories to tell. And unlike the Joker, who has evolved and adapted and changed, and I mean, a cat having 9 lives, Catwoman has had like 60 lives.
Oh, at least. Yeah, we were.
I mean, she ought to be on an episode of Hey Mom. How many jobs you have, Catwoman?
Can we stop? That's not even a deep cut.
That's a medium cut.
You had to frack for that. You should check your groundwater.
I am in Texas. That's apparently what we do here.
But yeah, so the wedding itself, July 4th, 2018. So still a little bit out. You can get your RSVPs in now. And everyone's invited. But tonight we kind of wanted to get in there and you know, off mic, we had one of those conversations, and if you ever talk to any podcasters, there's a moment in time where you're talking to your fellow podcasters, whether it be your co-hosts, like, you know, like Cole and I, or just you know, friends that are into whatever you're into, where you're like, I wish I could bottle what just happened. That's the podcast. And I lost my damn mind talking about the dynamic between Batman and Catwoman, where, you know, Batman is static. Batman has been static. Batman has been Batman since 1940, probably before 1940, because before we get a Catwoman in the comics, we get a Robin. So yes. Batman has been a static character since 1940. You know what you're going to get when you get Batman. There is, like I said, there's a style sheet. It is imprinted on your DNA at birth. Batman is Batman. Batman is Crime Alley. Batman is no guns. Batman is the scowl. Batman is, you know, rarely smiles. Batman is friggin' Batman. So,
yeah, you have this sort of built-in idea of what Batman's going to be. There are some subtle variations here and there, but for the most part, regardless of the incarnation, the era, the writer, the artist, the current socio-political climate, Batman remains Batman, except for those awkward years where he used to straddle the 16-inch guns on battleships along with Robin and Superman. During the war. But I think everybody did strange things in the 40s. So.
And we're gonna talk about that too, because that plays a major role in the evolution of Catwoman, going from the cat, which was where she started, to being, you know, Catwoman in the comics. The war effort, the war had a ton to do with that. But the cool thing is, if Batman is static, right? You got a static Batman. You get and everyone around Batman is generally pretty static. Your Robins are Robins. Your Alfred is Alfred. Your Batman is Batman. All of a sudden, you introduce a character like Catwoman, who is dynamic as all hell. You have free reign to do with Catwoman whatever you will, and they absolutely went buck wild with Catwoman.
Truly, her era in which she was created, you have a very strong, dynamic female character going toe-to-toe with your brooding male villain, your brooding male hero, as a contemporary villain.
Yeah, you didn't have female villains. You just didn't in comic books.
Unless it was like, you know, girl-on-girl villainy, you know, Wonder Woman could have female villains because it was okay.
Yeah.
It's sort of like being pulled aside at the airport to be patted down. You know, you kind of had to have the lady officer come in if you're a woman. But, you know, to have a Batman villain who's a girl, and the odd thing is, it, as near as I can tell, the world remained unbothered by this.
Yeah, which is there. See, here's the social justice dynamic that was born into was it had to be fantasy. As long as it was fantasy, it was acceptable because, you know, a woman police officer, you know, a woman pilot. Well, you should be a stewardess, Missy. You know, it's that.
That's right.
It's that mentality. Okay.
Well, woman on the plane belongs walking up and down the aisles with a cot of drinks.
Right. Let's smack her on the ass and send her on her way. That was the, and that's not an exaggeration. That was the mentality.
We need flyboys in the front and hot girls in the back.
So, you know, it's
old airline.
Old TWA. But that was the mentality. So it was only in a fantasy setting that you could have a Catwoman that was a stewardess turned cat burglar who brought the ankle.
Yeah,
because that's what it was. It's like, we need to bring some sex appeal into Batman. Whatever, girl, show her ankles.
Yeah, we can. Well, they gave her those little like ankle boots.
Yeah,
she had that, like, you know, the thigh slit dress. And the ankle boots, which, you know, if you're going to break into houses in the middle of the night and pick locks and open safes, that's the attire you really ought to be wearing.
Right, right.
Because it's conducive to, you know, crawling through windows and quietly moving through dark spaces.
So let's talk a little bit, since we're into this right now, let's talk a little bit about the inspiration for Catwoman. Where Catwoman came from, where, when Finger and Kane, BillFingerBang.com, decided to, still exists, still fucking out there, I'm just waiting for that big offer to come in from the Finger estate.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Says, please don't, just, we'll pay you not to.
That's right. How much to never mention this again?
Decided this character needed to be in the universe. It was literally in Batman number one. And when they created this character, they created it to add sex appeal to Batman, because all of a sudden you've got a grown man running around with a little boy punching monsters in the face.
Exactly. You did need to distract from the fact that you have a filthy rich adult, you know, plying his fortune to go and adopt some what was it? Adventure-eyed teen.
Oh, God damn Adventure-eyed teen. It's never going to go away. Keep hoping it's going to go away.
Thank you, Yahoo Answers, for giving us Adventure-eyed teen. Even if quite by accident.
We need to do another Yahoo Answers show is what we need to do. Yeah, so when they came up with the idea of Catwoman, it was to be a friendly foe who committed crimes, but also as a romantic interest for Batman's rather sterile life. So in Batman number one, they had decided Batman's got a sterile life and needed to fun up the business.
Well, I mean, it's obvious he had to adopt.
I want.
But then apparently it reversed because he had Damian.
I want you. Are you? Do you have your research in front of you?
I did, but my
God,
the
damn it,
research...
I don't know what this. I want you. I'm about to post a sentence into the thing, Cole, and I want you to read this sentence. Okay, read that sentence for me, will you?
All right. Let's see if this will cooperate. This is like doing the live show. Nothing's working.
Nothing's working right.
That works very smooth on this thing. Why will this not open for me all of a sudden?
Well, it's all right. Never mind. It's fine.
Well, we'll stall for a moment with other things.
Well, I wanted to say,
I'm going to read those damn words, mister.
I know you will. So when they came up with the idea for Catwoman, they based it on Jean Harlow. the actress, Jean Harlow, which is really interesting because, you know, that was their idea of sex on wheels.
Yeah.
That was in the '40s. In the thirties, that was sex on wheels. She died very young at 26. So she died in 37, but looking back, they're like, Harlow, that's the ticket right there. We're going to make it Harlow, married like 8 times. But that's the point, right? Is only in Hollywood.
How dare you use such big grammar on me?
Did you find it?
Yes, indeed.
So they described Harlow as, yes, Cole, I want to hear you read it. Read it for me in that voice.
Feminine pulchritude at its most sensuous.
That's how they described her.
Apparently they were channeling Garrison Keillor when they did it. I don't know.
I'm an intelligent man. I have a fairly large vocabulary, and there is a word in that sentence that I've never heard before.
I have heard the word, but not explored it. Every now and again, I will encounter words and get curious about them. Just by nature, because I do also pride myself on having a fairly sizable vocabulary, to the point of like sort of bordering on Eugene from The Walking Dead at times. But that's one I've never adequately explored, so I can't speak to it in full. And I suppose in this day and age, the definition is at my fingertips. But
but keep in mind, this is a woman that was married something like six times. Five times.
She died so young, she'd have been married a sixth time.
I'm sure she would have. She became a leading lady for MGM when she was signed by Howard Hughes. She coined the term platinum blonde. I was reading a really interesting piece about her where they went through this painstaking process of creating the hair color that she has. And they had a contest. This is, God, I wish we could still do stuff like this. They had a contest to try to match the hair color. So people were out there just destroying their hair, trying to bleach it and make their hair the same color as Jean Harlow. But it cannot be expressed how popular Jean Harlow was, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, the freedom that Jean – and here's the interesting thing, right? We're talking about the 30s. The perception of freedom that Jean Harlow had that the average woman did not.
Yeah.
Being able to marry multiple times, you know, being able to be free to be in the papers and the tabloids and not be in an apron in the kitchen. Keep in mind, we're talking about the 30s, you know, and that's where they got the idea.
Yeah. And the thing is that she is this larger than life personality, who did step outside of the traditional roles of her period. And I can see where that would be an ideal catalyst, you know, minus the platinum blonde TM. but yeah, it's almost like the, you know, automotive design trying to come up like, oh, it's our new champagne blue.
Right.
So, ideally, champagne isn't blue, but okay.
And the other inspiration that I was able to find, as we talk about this was I was doing the research and I stumbled across, Anne Hathaway from the, Dark Knight Rises movie. And she said she drew her inspiration from Hedy Lamarr. And I thought that was really interesting because, not necessarily because of who she was as an actress or the sighting that she drew her inspiration because of the way that she breathed and the way that she carried herself, but more because of everything else that Hedy Lamarr did that I think ties back in so beautifully to what we view as the liquid or the dynamic nature of Catwoman at this point, which is, you know, Hedy Lamarr is in the National Inventors Hall of Fame for creating a spread spectrum and frequency hopping technology that they say was the forefather to cell phones, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth.
Wow.
So she was an actress, and then the war effort, right? And she lived until the year 2000. So she's a beast. Hedy Lamarr is a beast. just understand that. But I don't want to, you know, rely to, I don't want to wait and live too much in this moment. There is one other quote I wanted to get to before we move on. And that was, in talking, Finger and Kane, when referencing, the feline nature of Catwoman, and talking about why a cat, right? He said, I felt that women were feline creatures and men were more like dogs. While dogs are faithful and friendly, cats are cool, detached, and unreliable. Keep in mind, not my quote.
That's right. And quote by
the creators of Batman, I felt much warmer with dogs around me. Cats are as hard to understand as women are.
Well, you know, in the same way that Batman, you know, it would not have worked. The character as like a leading role type of character as a woman wouldn't work because men are more likely to be just brooding all the damn time.
Right.
You know, a Batwoman would have eventually said, okay, this is bullshit. I need to get on with my life. And you know, I can still fight crime as Batwoman, but I don't have to carry Joe Chill on my shoulder all the time. And I think that you have a Catwoman becomes a good counterpoint to the brooding Batman, and that, you know, she's out there like a cat doing her own thing, and he's sort of like self-limited, being a creature of the night. Cats are kind of diurnal; they kind of operate all over, you know, all hours of the day and night, mainly because they sleep 26 hours a day, but. you know, you can see cats equally active in the, you know, the bright sunlight or in the deep cover of night. So she's got a little more flexibility that is then, you know, as a Catwoman, but then as a cat burglar. And I think that, you know, that's part of the character as well, as, you know, our Catwoman is also a cat burglar, taking the cat theme to catty new levels in Catalina.
No. You had it up until Catalina. Did somebody step on a Pop Top again?
I think so.
The callback joke for one person, his name is Cole.
That's right. Nobody else will know what that means. But,
I don't care. I'm all messed up. but no, to fall back on what you were just saying, I think that there's always been, and I think as we go through this, we'll find it over the next couple hours, is there's always been a little bit of jealousy from Batman because of the way that Selina Kyle can move through life and Batman can't, you know, there's a reason outside of the fact that she just has nice gams, which we'll get into in a second, that Batman is so willing to just kind of, unlike anyone else, just let her off the hook at every turn. And I think part of that is she brings excitement to a life for Batman that is routine, where you know Batman has a, like they were saying, he has a dull life, he has a sterile life, and Catwoman offers an excitement that he doesn't usually get.
Exactly.
But speaking of Catalina and nice games, let's get into the early years of Catwoman and what that looked like. I love the initial origin of this character. It's so great. So literally in Batman number one, that's her first appearance, and that is as the Cat, not Catwoman yet. She basically got born identity'd. which is great. She was a stewardess who lost her memory after a plane crash, had no idea who she was, and apparently somehow, again, born identity, started robbing people for their jewels to survive. The first meeting of Batman and Catwoman happens on a cruise ship. This is so, God, the 40s were so sexist. I gotta remember, this isn't us. This is the 40s. This isn't us. She's attempting to rob a necklace on a cruise ship dressed as an old woman. And Batman picks her out of the crowd as the offending would-be thief by the fact that she has nice legs.
No old lady would have legs that shapely.
Right. Right.
Legs, pantyhose won't be invented for another 40 years.
Did you put an apostrophe in there?
I did. Okay. I actually enunciated the apostrophe.
You were like eggs.
Yeah, it's like D'Artagnan.
I felt for a second that I was in the presence of Bobby McFerrin. Eggs.
Eggs. Yeah, it's this was one of the best. There are like a couple of panels from old Batman comics that get a lot of coverage.
Oh, that boner panel's one of them for sure.
And then, of course, the famous bat slap. And then this is one of my personal favorites, where he's accosted Selina.
Yes.
And is revealing her disguise by wiping off her old lady makeup. And she's like, "Let go of me!" And the best Batman line ever was, "It quiet or Papa Spank."
Yes, yes, quiet or Papa Spank was in this issue. Oh, it hurts! It hurts on the inside.
Do we have like just this momentary lapse there, Bruce? Or I mean, there's one thing to sort of, you know, sex up the comics, but this is like fetishism. This is like what, you know, you'd find in the personal ads at Craigslist or something.
Oh my God! Yeah, it's like, and
Fet Life Batman.
Papa needs to spank a cat.
That's right.
Papa needs to. Sometimes, what was the line from the Batman? The Pete Holmes Batman, which the best line in any of them was, "Sometimes the sexiest thing a woman can do is forgive." So funny. She didn't have an alter ego or a backstory or anything until the third issue, where she shows up in the third issue and all of a sudden she's got like a cat mask, and she's doing like super, she's got the long dress and she's doing the super theatrical type robberies. So they decided pretty quickly.
Didn't she start
after,
out with like a full head tiger mask, like something she
Bronze like, Tiger style,
or like she'd found it at a pep rally.
Oh,
it's the East Side Tigers. Bill, where's your mask? You can't go out like that.
Come here, Papa. I'm Catwoman. No.
That's right. No.
No, that's purpose defeating.
I was nearly seduced.
That's purpose defeating. So yeah, like by the third issue, she's doing all that stuff. And then she's in and out of Batman comics there, Papa Spank style for a while, because she became very, very popular. Keep in mind, right? What happens in the 40s through about 40 what? 3, 44?
About like 40, yes, 40, early 40s is, you know, this is where things start to change considerably for everybody.
Right.
Because by 1937 through 45, and especially from 41 to 45 for America, the big war hits.
Yep. And what happens is we see a mass departure. So two things happen that are really important for Catwoman during this time period. We see a mass departure of men and boys, let's be honest, overseas, right? And then we also see this is literally, and I was doing a little bit of research. This is literally the time at which Rosie the Riveter hits. Women start stepping up. Women start stepping into the workforce in a huge way. This is when that happens. Also, it needs to be noted that Elmer Fudd makes his first appearance in early 1940.
Elmer Fudd was was sort of the stereotypical 40s man of leisure with a speech impediment. A lot of people don't realize that there were a lot of lispy, sports.
And now the camera turns its eye to history. Right. It's so, you know, that's the time period we're in. Women need role models. Men need sex appeal. And in walks Catwoman in a fashion in which we can start sending comics overseas to be able to be read, and also really a paragon of the of women empowerment and women's liberation here stateside.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about it is, to the boys overseas, they're fighting the war and with our allies and crushing the Nazi menace. The real sex appeal is found in women who abandon a life of crime to own a pet store.
That's exactly what she did.
The thing is, you asked the doughboys and nothing was hotter. I don't know why they would be referred to still as doughboys in the Second World War, but it just happened just now.
Well, and the thing is, as we became more conservative, right, and we did, they toned it down with Catwoman because they had to, because everything was getting toned down. So she ended up falling for Batman more frequently than Batman fell for her. And this is the first this is the first time she starts trying to woo Batman in a serious fashion.
And this is sort of the beginning of the romance between the two.
And she retired. She retired in the 50s. In 1950, she retired from her life of crime, like you said, to run a pet shop.
Exactly. And this is also, you're coming up now as you're going into the 50s. You're coming up on a period where, you know, like you said, this is the first overtures of romance are coming in, because he's sort of realizing, you know, why go out and try to steal rich people's jewels when you get a rich guy to just bring them to you?
Well, I mean, not only that, but consider what was really popular. So we're pushing the late 40s and early 50s. And if you look at the industry, the comic book industry, nothing was more popular than, in this time period, romance comics and slice of life comics.
That's so true. Especially, you know, this is a period where the Western, the horror, and the romance, and to a lesser degree, you were starting to see a drop off in, like, you know, police detective type stories, and a lot more just kind of almost like comic book soap operas.
Yeah, yeah. We've talked about, we did that entire episode on that, and that's the period we're in. It's the rise of the serialized slice of life romance books, and the wild child, jewel thief, that kid don't play right now. It's just not popular enough to carry, to help carry Batman. So Batman. So also, Cole, when did the Comics Code Authority come into full swing?
Well, the thing is, the what was it? Seduction of the Innocent comes in, what, 1950 some odd?
Right.
And prompts the arrival of the Comics Code Authority to sort of thwart what might have happened otherwise.
But that blood was in the water during this time period where, you know, people started to be really careful about the stories that they were telling and how what would be considered risque. Because I think it
really came down to the nature of the publishers, and your more mainstream were, you know, they were seeing where this was headed.
Right.
And had a better sense of, you know, trying to protect themselves and protect their market, where others were still banking heavily on that kind of pulp sensationalism. You know, we're talking about, you know, Seduction of the Innocent was sort of targeting the mass murder, you know, horror dismemberment ordeal. Sure. Type of comics. And not everybody was doing that, but in a way, I think the entire industry recognized that the sensationalists were going to drag everyone down with them. And even the ones that tried to be as wholesome as possible were getting caught up. I think in many ways I've never really read extensively on the the congressional hearings and stuff, but I think that a lot of what often happens in cases like this is you have a lot of, you know, if it isn't overt, then you find people casting about.
Sure. Yeah, it's the Red Scare. They're going to reach.
They're going to find what they're looking for in everything.
Right. So
whether it's there or not.
So the days of Stop or Papa Spank are over. And now we usher in the days of Batman fighting robot dinosaurs and, you know, that type of story now versus what we had before, which was this romance dynamic. There was no place in the industry, you know, for better or worse, for those stories because they were everybody was absolutely mortified that they were going to, you know, some sort of strange pulp McCarthyism and get thrown under the bus.
Yeah. But, yeah, I thought it was...
Go ahead.
It was in 1954 that the Comics Code Authority came into being.
So it wasn't that far after. Okay.
Yeah, it was like really on the heels of Wortham's Seduction of the Innocent gaining popularity, at least amongst those who court that sort of thing. You know, the types that are spoiling for controversy in all things. And, it, you know, Wortham played beautifully into that mentality.
Oh, sure. Sure. He definitely Nick Cage... you know, Nick Cage that in, God damn, I had the reference and I just, God damn, I lost it. What's the movie I'm thinking of? That was the remake of the weird, they go to the island and he's the detective looking for the girl and,
Is it Cape Fear or
no, wait, one that's, with the that's bees. Not him. The cult.
Oh, the Wicker Man.
Yes. Thank you. It was definitely a Nick Cage Wicker Man situation.
Oh,
where,
yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you for saving a metaphor, a weird metaphorical reference. But she's gone for about 15 years in comics, which is weird to say now. Can you imagine now Catwoman being gone for 15 years in comics?
It would be like, say, you know, somebody deciding that Deadpool was too over the top for the kids.
Yeah.
And him having disappeared from, like, the 90s through now.
It would be, and we say that, right? And it seems like a joke. It seems like something that could never happen, but we cannot underestimate the popularity of Catwoman.
Yeah.
Because she was insanely popular, and then they had to retire her. Which is nuts. It's a nuts thing to say. Imagine Deadpool right now at the height of his popularity, them saying, "Nope, we gotta retire this guy. We're gonna put him to bed," and he's gone for 15 years. That is insane. Until everybody's favorite TV show airs, Cole.
Oh yes, and the thing about it is. We've talked about it on the show before, I'm sure, about how the campy Batman television series was one of those periods where sales on a comic went insane. I think the only other place where you could really see this happening as the result of another medium would be how, you know, reprints of the Watchmen trade paperback, because I'm going to bring that in here somewhere.
Jesus Christ.
But, you know, when the movie was announced and when it came out, it became the number one selling comic ever.
Right.
Because, I mean, they had sold more in the months leading up to and during and after the film coming out than they sold in the initial print runs up to that point, which is a tricky thing to put your head around. The thing had been available for years. And in the course of less than a year, the sales from that time period exceeded the sales of years.
Oh, sure.
So in many ways, the same thing sort of happened. All of a sudden, there's this resurgence in interest in Batman as parents are probably introducing their kids to this character that they grew up with, who now has a big presence on television. And the producers very shrewdly handpicked a few actual Batman villains to be part of the pantheon that, for the most part, they fabricated out of thin air for the rest of the series.
And the amazing part of this is the reason that they got rid of Catwoman in the first place is because they were worried about there were multiple reasons, but chief among them being they were worried about the sexuality. They were toning it down. It was the 50s. It wasn't Big Bad Mama anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, you would need another decade to really, that transition into the 60s for her to be allowed to come out from behind the counter at the pet shop.
Yeah. And the TV show absolutely did that in what has to be for the time period and what it was, the sexiest superheroes to ever have been introduced, like the trippiest far out incense peppermints, man.
I mean, everything about the presentation was purpose built. I mean, right down to her wearing the sexy gold belt around her hips, just to accentuate her femininity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was just such a hyper-sexualized, yet understated hyper-sexuality that it was just amazing they got away with that.
So what they did was then they used that as the platform, the springboard. But the other thing is, this was the platform and the springboard to bring back a lot of the villains that we talked about in the first Roguish Eyes, Catwoman being chief among them. The door swung wide open. We could bring her back. And more importantly than just bring her back, they could bring her back way more over the top than they ever have before. Like, just nutter butters at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a time period in which we are going to, and I do want to talk about that Catwoman in media a little bit, but
absolutely.
You know,
but we also want to point out here that we split this into two because we want to cover the character's origins up to a specific time period, so that part two then takes us from where we left off into the modern, and that's why we're not jumping headlong, apart from the mention of Wedding Bells at the beginning, into the modern incarnations, because this is a wonderful, Andy wanted to split this in half, and I'm like, the more we talked about it, the more we saw how much she's evolved, we had to. And I think really what we're going to find is juxtaposing these two separate pieces against one another, there is a distinctive kind of point where the next stage of evolution begins and just snowballs from there.
Right. Yeah, no, there absolutely is. I kind of wanted to touch back on the importance of this character during this time period to the social justice, women's liberation movement, because keep in mind that was ramping up during that time period, and how important that was to, the comic readers community, because keep in mind what comics were geared to were men.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, all of your men were gone. They were overseas. They were fighting in a war, a big war. So who's going to read these comics? Who's going to buy them? Women. So how do we gear this and make it towards women?
Yeah, it's not at all surprising that Catwoman begins to make appearances and stuff like, especially as we're going from the Golden to the Silver Age, in comics like Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane in the 60s. And by the time she appears in the 70th issue, by the way, of Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane.
That's a lot of issues of Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane.
Exactly. That's over 5 years that this title had been around. So you're talking from the very early 60s, and then all of a sudden Catwoman gets to sneak back on the scene. And I think that's how she pulls it off, is like guest appearances.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, Betty White after the Mary Tyler Moore show. The next thing you know, she's like all a big deal again.
All of a sudden, she's a big deal again.
Yeah, all the guest appearances, the fantasy islands, the love boats.
That's how you get in, by the way, is on guest appearances.
Yeah, hello, Larry.
That
was another deep one. That was deep fracking. I can't back up that she was ever on Hello, Larry, but it seemed like the sort of thing that would happen.
She was on the Bob Newhart show. She was on Night Court. Rest in peace, Harry Anderson. God damn, that one hurt.
That one was just a cut.
That wasn't a shallow cut. That was the first cut is the deepest. The 60s. There was a period of time where, keep in mind, in the 60s, Batgirl had been introduced. By this point in the comics.
Yes.
So there was a period of time where they wrote Catwoman, and there are some really interesting comics where had Facebook existed in the 60s in comic books, there would have just been panel after panel of Selina Kyle just writing shitty comments under anything Batgirl posted. Like, just stalking her like the Dickens. Because she had Batman's attention, and she didn't, which is, a weird kind of, I guess, like a second wave feminism, like, I'm gonna do this because I'm a woman and I can stand up for myself type thing, but it just wasn't,
it's not like she'd, given Batman a bob ring or anything.
That's true. And even to the point where she appears as a, later as a radical feminist with a group of ex-cons that she made into what's called what she was trying to engage in a war of the sexes, which was all just a smokescreen for robbing some pearls.
Hey, whatever works,
So I don't think the 60s, they were trying to figure her out in the 60s.
And this, I think, is sort of the pains of the evolution. Because you begin to move her into a whole new place in comics by the 70s, she is more or less freshly reintroduced. She's only, by the 60s, she's not been back into the full swing of things.
Well, she's completely different, because when she retired, she was a sex pot turned a new leaf and became a pet store owner.
Just like Betty White.
Just like fucking Betty White. National treasure. And then she disappeared for 15 years. Reappears after being on this TV show as being portrayed in equal parts by Julie Newmar and Eartha Kitt. Just hot as all hell. And now they got to figure out what they're going to do with it.
Well, an interesting little fact I'd read, or a little snippet about Catwoman, is as you're going into the 70s, apparently there were various stories in which she, beyond just the petty or the larceny, she's depicted committing murder.
Really?
Which was, a whole new thing. And it seems like there was a kind of editorial decision made to remand the murderous Catwoman to Earth B.
Yes.
So that... it's okay. It wasn't the Catwoman you know and love. It's Earth B Catwoman.
Well, and then as you know from your study of Crisis on Infinite Earths, there was a whole, I forget what Earth it was on, where she gave it all up to become a weird housewife for Batman. I forget which Earth that existed on, but it was very, very Cleavers. Very
it was actually
type.
Earth minus 19. I'll let people mull over the significance of that.
But they were really trying to figure out what to do with this character coming into, the 70s and 80s. And I'm not even going to get into Frank Miller's Batman. We're not going to, besides to say the words Frank Miller's Batman, I'm not going to get into what Frank Miller did to poor Selina Kyle. It's gross.
Frank Miller's gross. Well, you know, it's Frank Miller. But what's interesting about the character, though, is that she's always been a very strong, a very willful, a very smart character. And there's this wonderful subtext about Selina Kyle that, you know, various writers really caught on to even back in her early days. I read a little bit of a snippet about it. Apparently there was a story where when Selina Kyle was like a teenager, she was in a detention center and caught the director up to some malfeasance and got tied up in a bag and thrown in the river.
Jeez. Yeah, and the thing is, they just keep rewriting her history just over and over. And again, that lends itself to the malleability of the character, because guess what you can't do? You can't rewrite Batman's origin over and over.
Yeah.
Nobody has ever done it. Like, you know, you have Crime Alley, you have your parents shot, you have it coming out of a play / movie / 4D D-box experience now. I don't know what they're going to do next, but I guarantee you it'll involve leaving a place where they were watching Zorro or the Fledermaus or whatever it's going to be. You know, somebody stabs, shoots, disintegrates, boom tubes, whatever his parents.
Watching a restored version of the Bat Whispers.
You know, whatever it might be.
Sitting next to Bob Kane because he got time bulleted back to...
To deal with his life.
To deal with his actual origins. Why did you create me?
Right. Oh, God, but we digress. And
my,
we should
my
wrap...
mother's name was Martha.
We should wrap up our journey through the 70s. The next issue we're going to have will be the 80s through the present. I could not be more excited about that, because there's all kinds of weird, wild stuff to talk about.
It's literally the 80s become the Catwoman Renaissance, and we will definitely talk about that. Because the 60s, you see this sort of awkwardness, this... nobody really knows what to do. She becomes this hot potato that, you know, we want her back, but we don't know how to bring her back. By the 70s, you see the character starting to get a bit of a foothold.
Yes, yes.
Making more appearances, getting a smart-looking Catmobile in the 60s and 70s. You know, starting to have some cat accessories.
Damn it.
And you know, and some of that has to be inspired by the television series.
Oh yeah,
one of the coolest things was like that cat gun. What the?
Well, and everything.
How do you get one of those?
So everything was inspired by the television series at that point. You know,
absolutely.
And
if I'm not mistaken, Batgirl first appears on the television series.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then they're like, "Hey, why haven't we thought of that in the last 40 years?"
Well, and it isn't till we get into those supposed dark ages, you know, as we come into the late 80s, early 90s, that we really see, you know, a move away from that influence from the television series.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's stop there. Next week, we're going to go from the 80s and beyond. We'll go through the dark ages. We'll go through some of the Crisis on Infinite Earths, and then up through the inevitable wedding to come. Her time in the Justice League's coming up. Her time as a do-gooder, a full-time do-gooder.
Yeah, the period where she had her own title.
Yeah, she's had a bunch of her own titles.
Yeah, she really has. And just her constant presence both in the life of Batman and in the greater DCU in general.
Right, but that's next week. So, Cole, why don't you plug us up? And we'll get out of here, and then next week we'll come back with more Cat Fancy. It's not just a magazine anymore.
Damn you. Well, since that wasn't a complete catastrophe.
Damn it.
We are coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com, where little by little, technical difficulties still weigh me down. By the time you're listening to this, it will... be the first issue to be up on time on the website, on Podbean, everywhere. Look for us. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can I'm trying to get very serious about using social media. I'm surprised I don't do more of it. I'm not averse to it. But Andy, thank goodness. Magnus is our social media representative in the way that Eddie is for the Rancor Pit. And hey, speaking of the Rancor Pit, Eddie and I are working on bringing the audio podcast back. We are really excited. We came back from a hiatus and then took another equally long one almost immediately after starting to record again. So we're bringing back the pre-recorded show on the JCU and on the first and third Sundays of every month over at DallasOnAir.com from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central, you can catch the Rancor Pit live. We are getting darn close to 100 episodes.
That's fantastic.
And we have just reached our fourth anniversary. So as we say, it is the RPR4. Is the official droid of the fourth anniversary of the Rancor Pit Live. And, you know, the show itself is a little over 5 years old now. And, it's been an amazing ride. And on the first Sunday of every month from 9:30 to 10:30, Eddie and his wife, Colleen, bring you Figments, the, Unexplained Mysteries podcast. And on the third Sunday of every month from 9:30 to 10:30 AM Central, Isle of Toys. And, my own co-host here, Andrew Farmer, had joined me on the May or the April episode. So be sure and check that out on the archive. And,
it was fun. It was entirely too much fun.
Oh, and you can see me and hear Andy. And I had a gag in mind that I want to save for the next time Andy's on the show. And, just did not have time to pull it off. And if you happen to want to catch the next live episode in May, my dad will be joining me, and we'll be talking about 10 toys and toys of yesteryear. We still have Athy Jedi Cole U. I'm going to start trying to tweet again. I mean, how does one follow Trump? You know, it's just when there's that big a tweet show going on, why bother? You're just going to get lost in the middle of it. But I'm pretty much spent
now. All right. Well, join us next week for more Selena Kyle and, of course, buy, collect, enjoy your comics. And I guess that's it for tonight. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody. And we are pushing ourselves ever closer to the 300th episode of the show.
That's right. It was going to be very special, speaking of Frank Miller. God, lots of loincloths, lots of ripped dudes, lots of hunchbacks, lots of
horse voices.
That's right. A lot of dining in hell. But next week, we go back to pork meal. So join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics. Good night.